Today is Wednesday, May 17th. This is the Women's Chumash here. We're up to Bereshit, the middle of Perek Yudalad and Parshas Lech Lecha.
Okay, Rabotai. We're in the middle of Perek Yudalad, in which the Torah describes this battle of the five kings versus the four kings. And last week we got up to Perek Pasuk Yudalad, after somebody designated as the Palit, somebody who was spared from the war, one of the people who was not taken captive, whoever that is, according to Rashi in the Midrash, it was Og Melech HaBashan, according to Ibn Ezra, it's just any ordinary person. And they informed Avram that his nephew Lot had been taken captive. So, beginning with Pasuk Yudalad, we see how Avram reacts and what are the consequences of his getting involved in this particular battle. So the Torah writes, we'll read a couple of psukim. Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv. Avram heard that his brother had been taken captive. It wasn't his brother, it was his nephew. Vayarek et chanichav. It's a very difficult phrase to translate. I'm translating it the way Rashi translates. Vayarek, he armed chanichav, his newly trained soldiers. Yelidei Beito, people who were who grew up under the auspices of Avram's household. Shmona Asar Shlosh Meot, 318. And Vayirdof Adan, they pursued them until the city of Dan. Vayecholek Alehem Laila, as the night approached, they split into two camps. Hu Va'avadav, Vaya came, and they struck whoever they encountered. Vayir defeim ad chova asher mismol ledamasek. And they pursued them until the city of Chova, which is to the left of Damascus. Vayashev eskol harechush. They returned all of the loot that had been taken by Kedar Laomer and his gang to the five kings. Vegam et lot achiv urechusho heshiv. He also restored the wealth of Lot, his nephew. Vegam et hanashim v'ta'am. And he returned all the women and the rest of the people who were taken captive to their respective nations. Vayetze melech Sedom likrato acharei shuvo mehakot et Kedar Laomer v'ta'am lochim esher ito. The king of Sedom, who was one of the beneficiaries of Avram's involvement, after he returned from the battle with Kedar Laomer, he returned El Emek Shaveh Hu Emek HaMelech, to a place called Emek Shaveh, and that was popularly known as Emek HaMelech. We'll see what this is in a few minutes. And then the Torah interrupts Stone, which should have continued immediately in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. We should have skipped Psukim Yudchet and Yutet, because the Torah tells us in Yud Zayin that the king of Sodom is going to approach Avram. And then it says what he said in verse Chaf Aleph, in 21, it says what exactly was the encounter about. For some reason the Torah interrupts the encounter which it described was about to happen, and what was said at that encounter with another piece of information, and we'll have to see the relevance of it, that Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem, we'll see who he is, Hotzi Lechem V'yayin, he brought out bread and wine on behalf of Avram, and he was a Kohen, and Avram, he blessed Avram, he said, Baruch Avram Le'el Yon Konei Shemayim V'aretz, Ubaruch El Elyon, and blessed is God, Hashem Migain Tzarecha B'yadecha, who provided protection from your enemy. Vayiten lo ma'aser mikol. Avram gave Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem, ma'aser from everything that he had acquired. Then the Torah goes into the discussion between Melech Sodom and Avram. That's the unit which I hope to cover today. So let's go back now to Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv vayorek et chanichav. So take a look at Rashi. How does Rashi interpret the word vayorek? Kitargumo. Vizariz. Zariz means to arm them. It's used quite often in the Targum. In, for example, in translating the pasuk in Parshas Bishalach, that when Am Yisrael left, it says Vachamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim. So Rashi there again follows the Targum, and before he says the Medrash, Vachamushim means Mizuyanim. They were armed. Moshe provided arms for Bnei Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim, in case they would be attacked, because they never knew who they might approach. So here also, Avram takes these 318 people and provides them with military equipment. And then Rashi says, what is the word? And he brings various proofs to this. As it says in Vayikra Vaharikosi, it's in this week's Parsha, Vaharikosi acharechem cherev. I will arm them or you with what? With the sword. So you see that the word resh kuf, yarek, means to arm, because it says there is a cherev. Also, and Targum Unkelus says, as dayan b'charbi aleichem. So again, he uses that same word to arm with you, with the sword. V'chein orik charbi, torishema yadi, which we recite every morning in the Shira. Moshe says that Paro had said, "Orik charbi, I will take my extend my sword." When Paro said, when they ran away, what was his plans to run after them and to return them to Mitzrayim? He was going to use his sword. So Rashi believes that the word vayorek is to arm, and chanichav is means literally apprentices, chinuch, training. The people who were trained. In other words, they had no. These were not real mercenaries or professional soldiers. These were ordinary dudes who Avram decided to train them for war purposes. What training did Avram himself have that he suddenly becomes a captain in the army? We don't know anything about Avram's military ability. But the emphasis will be that he does nothing to rely on a miracle. He is going to try to fight this through natural causes. And Vayirdof Adan. And he pursued them until the city of Dan. That's the simple pshat, according to Rashi. And many others agree with this. Ibn Ezra believes that Vayarek means that as well. But Ibn Ezra says that Chanichav is just the opposite. Not a recent trainee, but someone who has been undergoing training for a long time. So Avram apparently prepared for some type of battle, not knowing whenever he might have to use these people, but he had a trained army ready to go. So okay, not terribly critical. Not terribly critical. However, Rashi chooses on the phrase shlosh asar, shmona asar u'shlosh meot. Rashi chooses to follow the Midrash. Rabosenu amru Eliezer levado haya. There was only one person with him. Vehu minyan gematria shel shemo. And this is, Eliezer is the numerical equivalent, I mentioned this last week, of his name. So, what's bothering the Midrash, and forced and compelled to say it, is that if you really believe that Avram plans on handling this through natural means and not relying on any miraculous intervention by God, what would you find as somewhat difficult in the presentation of this pasuk? If that was the underlying theory, that Avram is not relying on any miracles.
So
What? Only 318 people? What are you, crazy? That's nuts. There we have four kings who are fighting five kings, defeating them, and one could only imagine how many thousands of people the five kings brought along to fight the four kings. One can only imagine thousands of people. And here Avram is going to make an effort to rescue his nephew with 318 people? That makes no sense. Therefore, the Midrash believes that it's quite the opposite. Avram knew that under natural, in ordinary warfare, I don't stand a chance to winning this war. And whether I take 200 people or 318 people, it's not going to make a difference. So therefore, what does he do? He takes only one other person, Eliezer. He takes the person whose name indicates how does he plan on winning this war. He plans on winning the war with God's assistance. That's why he takes Eliezer. God is my salvation. So what's bothering the Midrash is that assuming that he would take 318 people and thinking that he's going to make a dent against these four kings in a natural scenario is just totally preposterous. And as a result, the Midrash feels more comfortable stating that that the 318 is not really a number, but it happens to be the gematria of Ibn Ezra. Eliezer.
67 was comparison.
Yes, no doubt about it. No doubt.
Why are we assuming that a king in this sense is a king as we understand it from, you know, medieval times on? Maybe these are local warlords who each had small armies of thugs.
It is possible.
Maybe was it significant?
It is possible. That's possible.
Because nine kings in our understanding would encompass, you know, a
huge amount.
Right,
yes.
a continent, whereas here it all took place in one small area.
We don't know how far wide. Yeah, it's going. It's actually, Rashi will point out, or the Ramban will point out, that if this is reaching Damascus, that's a huge amount of territory to go from the middle of Israel. That's a huge amount of territory. Huge. In fact, the Ramban will make that point. But take the Ibn Ezra for a minute on the bottom of page number one. So Ibn Ezra says, Chanichav Shechancham Pa'amim Rabot Bamilchama. It means that he trained them continuously. So these were seasoned soldiers, at least. Ve'im Lo Nizkar. Even though there is no reference to Avram engaging in military preparations any place in the text. But that, nonetheless, I, Ibn Ezra, believe is the simple pshat. The Cheshbon Otiyot Eliezer Derech Rash, and anybody who wants to buy into the fact that the 318 is the numerical value of Eliezer, that's pure drash. Ki ein hakatuv midaber begematria. The pasuk never speaks based on communicating a message based on numerical value. That's not the style of the Torah. Yes, the rabbis make a whole big deal out of gematrias. But the Torah itself does not communicate in such a fashion. And it's unlikely that that's what the Torah had in mind. Why? Because if you were to give some significance to this, ki yachol yuchal harotzeh lahotzi kol shem letova l'ra. If you wanted to use gematrias, there are all kinds of gematrius rules to bend and this, that you can make up any idea, good or bad, and associate it with a particular word based on the numerical value. And therefore the Torah knew better than to rely on numerical values as a way of communicating any information. There is another indication which might have led to to Rashi and the Midrash, citing this particular Midrash. If you go back to the Rashi, and in the caption, Chani Chav, look at Rashi's comment. Chani Chav, Chanacho Kisiv. In fact, there's something in parentheses, it says that it was a Korean aktiv. In other words, take the word, go in the Chumash, and drop the Yud after the word Chaf, after the letter Chaf. So then it would be singular, Chanichal. So it's a Kri and a Ksiv. It's written as Chanichal, but the way we read it is Chanichal. Now in the Chumash, which we have our Chumash, it's not a Kri and a Ksiv. It says the way it's written is with the Yud, which is the plural. But if it was a Kri and a Ksiv, as Rashi says, Chanachol, the Sefer Torah, which Rashi apparently saw, it did not have a Yud after the word Chaf, after the Chaf. He knew it was read, his Rebbe told him to read the word Chanichah, like every Korean Ksiv in the Torah, which is, to, if you were to read it the way it's written, you, it has one way of being understood, but the way it's read, it has a second way of understood. So the way it's written, there's only one person being trained.
But Yili Day.
What?
Right after. Yili Day.
Yes.
Plural.
Now, that's true. That's true. That would be a...
318.
Right? And it says 318, but that's what leads the Midrash that there's 318. It's not really true. Because it says there was only one person, Chanicho, his trainee, not Chanichav, his trainees. So this would be a very interesting test case to check old manuscripts of Sifrei Torah if any of them actually had a ksiv, a writing of the word, which would lead us to the translation that it happens to be one single person versus many. Because there are many words in the Torah where there is a Korean ksiv. I don't know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to do things like that in a handful of places. But there are often major differences between the way the word is interpreted based on the ksiv and based on the way it's interpreted based on the Kri. So that's how Rashi would defend himself against any criticism why he relies so heavily on this particular Midrash. But Ibn Ezra gives it very little credibility, as we just read. Very little credibility.
Could you read the rest of the Rashi there?
Ze'eliezer, Shechanacho leMitzvot. Who Eliezer, who was trained by Avram to perform mitzvot.
Right.
Vahu lashon hatchalat knisat ha'adam okli leumanut shuhu atid la'amod ba. The word chanoch is a word which indicates the beginning of man's task or a utensil. You dedicate a utensil. And it's like v'chein chanoch lana'ar al pi darko. Supposed to educate. It means a child who is just reaching the age of training. Or Chanukat HaMizbeach, the dedication of the Mizbeach. That means the first time that the Mizbeach was being used. Or Chanukat HaBayit, the dedication of the house. So too, these soldiers were being used for the very first time. They had just been trained. They were never seasoned. They were never experienced. This is the first time that they are going into battle. That's what Rashi believes is the indication of the word Chanichav from Chanukat.
So he's giving two perushim.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
The second has nothing to do with Eliezer.
That is correct. He's just telling us why this word was selected in general. Yes?
Does this indicate that the Torah being read publicly so people could hear, who were not able to read, would hear one thing and the studious Aharonim would be studying, and because they could read,
yes,
they could give 100%. Interpretation?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also something that every scribe has to know.
Absolutely, because there's a difference between what
he writes. Yes, right, exactly. But he has to write the way it's the tradition has come down. Now, we do not disqualify a Sefer Torah if it does not have the ksiv. We do not. We read it a certain way, and we know it should be written a different way if it doesn't have it, because over the centuries, we believe, ein anu bikiyin b'kriya ksiv. We really have not mastered the masorah, the tradition, of exactly which words have this kriya ksiv phenomenon. And as a result, if something should not, if a Sefer Torah should not have it, like our Sefer Torah will not have the word chanicho, it doesn't have it, that would not automatically disqualify a Sefer Torah. Normally, if one letter is changed, it disqualifies the whole Sefer Torah. But these, any Korean exiv, which is not followed based on what we think is a Korean exiv, does not disqualify, because apparently the tradition has somehow been lost. Yes? What? That's correct. So he believes that's a hint to Eliezer. How, why is it a hint to Eliezer? Because that's the numerical value of his name. And it's only I read it and interpret the text based on Lashon Yachid, Chanacho, not Chanichav. Yeah. Yeah. Now, please go to page number 2 for just a minute, on the bottom of the page, and take a look at Kli Yakar. Kli Yakar is going to try to resolve this debate between what seems to be the Pshat and the Midrash. V'hakarov Eli, what appears to me, the bottom of the page of page 2. Lomar Bazeh, Shigam Rashi Modeh Shelokach Imo Shin Yudchet Anoshim Mamash. Rashi, if you pushed Rashi against the wall, he would also admit that there were 318 people who accompanied him. Why? Ki Chayav Kol Adam La'asot B'derech HaTeva Kol Ashe Yimatzei B'kocho La'asot. Man must be able to put all of his resources to resolving a separate problem, and that which nature will fail to provide, yashlim hanes, that will be provided for if God so desires, miraculously. So Rashi knew that. Ach shekoshe. What bothered Rashi was Loma Lokach Avram Dafka Mispar Shin Yudchet. Why did he die? That's a pretty odd number to take. 318. So what's the simple answer?
That's all he had.
That's all he had. He made a little call out to some friends, and 318 people showed up. That's what happens. The Torah is just reporting it accurately. But Kli Yakar thinks this is something of a deliberate nature. Uma higid lanu bazeh hakatuv. Ella lehorot, it wants to teach us, shahaita hamilchama kol kach chazak alav, that the battle was so difficult, ad shelo haya shum efshari b'derech hateva l'natzcham. There was no possible way that simply relying on nature that he could have been victorious. It was impossible. Umikol makom halach Avram lamilchama. Nonetheless, Avram entered into battle despite the fact that he knew that he had no chance of winning the war. Ki samach she'elohav yeh be'ezro. Why did he go out to the war? He was banking on the fact that God is going to intervene on his behalf. V'simana milsa. And there is a little sign indicated in the text that this was Avram's thought process. Ki lo kach imo anashim kimispar Eliezer. He took the number of people, which what? equaled Eliezer's name, Lehorot, to teach us, Ki Eliezer Levado Hayasham. Only Eliezer was there. Ki Lo Naaseh Hanitzachon Hahu Bishum Peulat Enoshit. This war was not won by any human endeavor. Ki Im Be'ezer Eloki Levad. Only through the what? Through the aid of God. Lefikach, and then he continues, and several Rashi himself will mention this. Lo radaf ki im ad Dan. They pursue them only until the city of Dan. Why? Visham. It says it's Dan is. Adan. Not sure exactly where Dan is.
Isn't it north?
It's somewhere to the north. Yes, it is somewhere to the north. That's for sure. It's in a northerly direction from where he started, which is Elonei Mamre. There's no doubt. But why did he stop there? Ki v'sham nistalka hashchina ba'avur ho'egel she'asidin lahamid bidan. Because in the future, there is going to be an Egel built in the city of Dan. So God didn't want to appear at that time. So once Avram lost divine protection, he somehow sensed it, and therefore he dared not pursue any further. Only Adan. Lefikach toshash kocho sham. His energy was sapped from him. Behistalkut ho'ezer ha'eloki, and therefore shene'emar vayecholek aleihem laila. Therefore, he had to split his camp into two. He goes one way, Eliezer goes the other way, because he had no guarantee of any divine protection. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want to enter the city of Dan, So Kliyakar tries to explain the combination. Rashi knew very well that there were 318 people. But he was bothered, why 318? That seems to be much too small a number, and there's got to be a reason why the Torah happened to report it was 318 people. Since Avram knew that it was impossible to win through natural means, he didn't take anybody other than Eliezer, and he put his entire confidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would respond, which halachically is the wrong approach, because as everybody knows the famous Gemara, Ein Somchin al Anes, you're not permitted to rely on a miracle. And here it appears that certainly Avram did, he did rely on a miracle, but it's possible.
Rabbi, yes. Like the 1967 war?
Yes.
There is no
doubt about it that any war that Israel participated in was done with the divine assistance. But everybody participates. You use all of your natural resources, and you have good intelligence, and you know that every day all of the Egyptian pilots do their runs between 6 and 8 in the morning, and at 9 o'clock in the morning they're all in the mess house having breakfast. That's exactly what they knew, and therefore the planned offensive attack was planned for 9:18 or something like that, when they knew that all their planes would be on the ground and no pilot or anybody there to defend them. But you do naturally. But of course, it's the great HaKadosh Baruch. Even Dayan said, with one eye I can see the presence of God. Even Dayan said that. Who was far from a religious personality, but yes.
It seems as though Avraham, in the days of Kliyakar, so if what you're saying, he had more than one person, did kind of a more, I would say, terroristic type of thing, came at night, it's with fewer people, it's got a whole lot of heavy rain. You can't go with a lot of people.
No, but this is only when they reached Dan did they split. When they were in Elonei Mamre, they were not yet split. It's only when he reached Dan and it got dark, that's when he splits. Up until now, he's fighting conventionally, not guerrilla warfare. Not guerrilla warfare.
Splitting implies guerrilla warfare?
Yeah, you go little here, little guy, one guy ducks in, takes a shot, then withdraws. Yes.
Many, that's right.
Yes. Because the assumption is, Mr. Kedar LaOmer is not releasing Lo because Avram is Rosh Kabar. He's not going to release it. He knew that in order to acquire, to regain his nephew, he's going to have to fight them and beat them militarily. Otherwise, Lo will remain as a captive of Kedar LaOmer and his three other kings. That was the assumption he made. And probably right. Yeah. Good. So the Torah tells us that they reached up. Then, Vayechalek Alehem Laila Huva Avadav. Rashi notices that this particular phrase is not very smooth. It should have been Vayechalek Alehem Huva Avadav Laila. That in the middle of the night, he and his servants, whether it's 318 or just one, whoever it is, they split at night.
What's Alehem? That seems to have what it's Almi.
On whoever was he's going to attack. On whoever he's going to attack. Let's take a look at Rashi. Vayechalek Alehem. Lefi Pshuto Sares Hamikra. Turn around the pasuk. Don't read it the way it is. It should be read, Vayechalek huva avadav alehem laila. That Avram split his group up against the enemy when? At night. At night. When it's too difficult. And Rashi says, Kiderech harotfim shemitpalgim achar hanir dafin kishiborchin zelikan v'zelikan. What happened was that initially the four kings of Kedar LaOmer and his gang fought together as a united front. But then when you start losing, what happens to people who start losing?
They start
running all over the place. So that's when they split. They decided to split and run in a variety of directions. Now Avram had no idea which way Lot was. So therefore, since the enemy had split into different directions, in order to successfully capture Lot, what did he have to do? He had to split his camp up. I'll go one way, you take the other route. That is the simple reading of the pasuk. That is a simple reading of the pasuk. So you read it, it is if it said, Vayechalek huva avadav alehem upon the enemy. When did they do this? Laila, at night. Continues Rashi, Laila, Kilomar Achar Shechoshcha. After it got completely dark. Why? What's the big idea here? Because normally in primitive times, warfare was never conducted at night. Because you couldn't see anything. So you were putting yourself in danger by walking around, and who knows where a sniper would be, where there would be a hole, so you can't see anything. So under normal circumstances, nobody engaged in military warfare at night. But Avram, lo nimnu miliratfam. Avram, since he's got divine escort, he might as well fight at night as well. And that was highly unusual for anybody to engage in military operations at night. That's the simple pshat. Umidrash Agada, and the Medrash says, Ubalo lachatzot, shenechalak halayla. The night was split. The word vayechalek is going on, not huva avadav, but vayechalek laila. There was a split. Exactly. Shenechlak halayla. The night was split in half. Ubechetzio harishon naase nolanes. In the first part of the night, God participated and miraculous events took place. Vechetzio hasheni nishmar Ubalo lachatzot laila shel Mitzrayim. Exactly. What does that mean? What does it mean? That the after the night, no, after midnight, around midnight, when what's his name? When Avram understood that they had reached Dan, and what happened to God's divine protection was gone, he realizes this. I can't conduct myself in the second half of the night the way I have the first half of the night. And therefore, what does he resort to? Maybe guerrilla tactics. He goes at night alone or with, let's say, 159 of his gang one way and 159 the other way. And they hit and miss. Let's imagine like a little guerrilla warfare attack. Why did he have to do that the second half of the night? Because he was missing divine protection. So Vayechalek does not refer to he and his men, but it means he engaged in two different types of warfare. The first type is just like a bull going straight ahead because he knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with him. Second half, he had to be a little more clever, a little more ingenious because he sensed the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu had left him. And therefore, according to the Medrash, under those circumstances, we know why Vayechalek Aleihem Laila, because God abandoned him at dawn.
So what's Mitzrayim?
What?
No, it's
the same idea. That the night when midnight came, something else took place. So what happened the first half of Mitzrayim, and the night in that Mitzrayim? What happened? Nothing. Nobody died. Vayhi b'chatzi halayla, then v'Hashem hika kol b'chor. So there is a splitting of the night. Here too, a splitting of the night in terms of Avram's style of engaging in battle.
How did he know? I don't understand. Was this an understanding?
Yeah, he understood. He felt HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence leaving him. So take page number 2 for just a moment again. So take a look at Svarno first. And he comments, Vayirdof Adan, nothing to do with any Avodah Zarah. Why? Svarno knew that the city of Dan was quite a distance from Eloneh Moreh. And nonetheless, he reached there pretty quickly. In one day's travel until midnight, he already reached from Eloneh Moreh to Dan. Says Svarno, Bimirutze, Lavo Alehem Pit'om. To what? Right, to come in quickly and surprise them. And many others claim that Avram was privileged to what's called Kfitzat Haderech, where God allowed him to cover lots of territory in a miraculous fashion, despite the fact that a human being, under normal circumstances, can't walk or run that far. But the Ramban says, Vayechalek Aleihem Laila, Kosav Rashi Lefi Pshuto, Kiderech Harotfim Shemitpalgim Acha Barchehem. Rashi explained, according to the Pshat, that the enemy ran away. When they start losing, they split up into groups. Kishibarchan zelakan v'zelakan. Laila kilomala acha shechoshcha lo nimel mirudafam. Even though it was night and normally battle did not take place, he did not hesitate to engage them. Fahanachon, and according to me, ki radaf oto biyom adan im kol machanehu. He ran from Eloneh Moreh to Dan with his entire 318 people together. The Kaasher Choshach Aleihem Halayla, as it got nighttime, V'lo hayaro'eh eize derech asher yivrechu ba. He couldn't detect anymore what direction the enemy had taken. During the day, you can see the enemy and pursue them. But at night, he had no idea which direction Kedar LaOmer and his three other kings had decided to take. Therefore, chalak amo v'avadav lishnayim o shlosha rashim. He divided his gang of 318 into two, possibly even three groups. V'lokach ho'echad imo, and he led one of the two or three groups. V'rotfu achareihem b'chol hadrachim, and they took all of the possible highways, and then v'hikum ad chova asher mismol damesek v'chaza milirudof achareihem, and then he retreated from pursuing them after what? They were successful of eliminating or defeating them, and he saw that there's no longer any opposition. He retracts. Vayechalek aleihem hu va'avadav laila. That's what the simple pshat means. So it doesn't mean that the enemy deliberately dispersed because they were lost. We have no idea which route they took. And Avram knew very well that in order to pursue them, I can't necessarily take one highway, because that means I might have taken the wrong highway and they're going to get away with Lot. So he splits his group up into several parts. The Ramban entertains three, might even be five, we don't know. But any possible road that could have left from Dan going to another area, he sent a delegation to pursue until he succeeded in reaching him. And the Ramban points out, Vayirdefeim ad chova asher mismol damesek. Yadua ki merchak rav min elonei mamre asher bechevron be'eretz yuda l'damesek asher hu chutz la'aretz. You know very well that the distance from Elonei Mamre, which is a suburb of Hebron, is a huge distance to Damascus, which is not even part of biblical Israel. Im kein radaf achrehem yamim rabim. This is no kfitzas haderech here. This took many, many days to reach Damascus. Ad hotzi osam min haaretz, until they what? They actually left, chased them out of Israel, out of Eretz Canaan. Kihem el b'chol artzam hayu chozrim. Kihem el bavel artzam hayu chozrim. Where were they headed? Northward to their own hometown of Bavel. Oh, Shahaya Neis Gadol, Kasher Darshu Rabotenu. Or perhaps this all happened in one day, as the rabbis have interpreted, commenting, the Medrash says, the Orach Biraglav Lo Yavo. If you were to walk naturally with your feet, you would never reach them this quickly. So something happened, it was Tfitzas HaDerech, the Ramban says that's a possibility, but the simple pshat is that they spent many days traveling together. Yes, no doubt. Yeah, very loyal to his nephew. Yes, very loyal to his nephew. And many Gedolim have made this point that when it comes to your own family, even though they are not observant and so on and so forth, and they might be, less than holy people, if they're members of your family, you have a responsibility to what? To speak out. To do everything to protect them. To do everything to protect them. So, in fact, somebody once asked the Brisker Rav in 1947. The Brisker Rav is the Rav's uncle, his grandfather's son, his father's brother, Reb Velvel Soloveitchik, who became the Brisker Rav after the famous Reb Chaim, the Rav's grandfather. He was the Brisker Rav. And then he moved to Yerushalayim and he started the Yeshivat Brisk in Yerushalayim. So when the Rav ran for Rav Rashi of Israel, of Tel Aviv, in 1935, it was the only time he was in Israel, he ran for Rav Rashi, he was still affiliated with the Aguda party. And that's why his family backed him. He was running on the Aguda ticket, not the Mizrahi ticket. The Rav was an Agudanik like the rest of his family. After the Shoah, and when the Medinat Yisrael started, so then he switched over, he became the president of Mizrahi, he was the honorary chair president of Mizrahi. He spoke at the Mizrahi convention every single year. And somebody asked the Brisker Rav, how come you didn't publicly attack him? He abandoned your party and now is with the Tzionim. You know, with the Tzionim. The Zionists. How can you? And the Brisker Rav said, yeah, I wholeheartedly disagree with him. But he's my nephew. And I can't publicly criticize my nephew. I have to remain loyal to my family members, even though I disagree with him totally. And that's what he said, because if you're a member of your family, and you're right, Avram should teach that, all of us, that you know, members of a family have to be treated a little differently, despite the fact that they don't meet up to one's expectations as to who you are from a religious standpoint, a religious vantage point. Yeah. Yeah. So then, let's continue with the text. Vayoshev et kol rechush, he returns all the booty. V'gam eslot achiv rechusho heishiv, v'gam es anashim v'esah. Now, as we said, the Torah interrupts the next pasuk with the arrival of Malkitzedek Melech Shalem. Malkitzedek Melech Shalem. So let me just translate the pasuk. Vayetze Melech Sdom Likrato, acharei shuvo mehakot et Kedol Omer. When the king of Sdom returns after battling Kedol Omer v'tamalachim meshenito, where does he come? El Emek Shaveh. Comes to a place called Emek Shaveh. And who Emek HaMelech? So take a look at Rashi. Rashi says Emek Shaveh. There's no significance to it. Kach Shemo, that was its name. That's the name. Okay. Ah, so I didn't bracket it, but if you look right below Rashi, you have that Mosaf Rashi. That's the Rashi in the other version, in his expanded version. Rashi says, Hushvu Kulam Be'etzam, on page 3, right below the Rashi and the Sifsei Chachamim. It's in the middle of the page, exactly in the middle of the page, El Emek Shaveh. Hushvu Kulam Be'etza Achat. Vehimlichu et Avram Alehem. All of the kings who were spared as a result of the Avram's intervention got together, Shaveh, they all agreed on one thing. Avram will be recognized as our leader. That's how Rashi interpreted Emek Shaveh. That's one possibility. And what does Emek HaMelech mean? And Rashi actually quotes it in the original Rashi as well. If you look in the second Rashi of the Pasuk, Emek HaMelech, look into the Rashi, it says, Umidrash Agada, Emek Shehushvu Sham Kol HaUmot, Vehimlichu et Avram Aleim, L'Nasi Elohim U'Lekatzin. They made Avram like a prince, and a minister, and an officer. He is their the CEO. He's their CEO, according to the Medrash's interpretation. Now, what is Emek HaMelech? Rashi says, Beit Risa Demalka. What does it mean? Bayit Ris Echad Shehu Shloshim Kanim Shehayim Yuchad LeMelech LeTzachek Shom. What does this mean? It means that the king had a private house where he used to go, right, to entertain? Exactly. He didn't necessarily entertain in his own palace. He had a place, and we can only just imagine what type of entertainment activities were taking off campus, off the palace campus. That's what Emek Shaveh, and that's what it means. Hu Emek HaMelech. This is the valley which the Melech always used to use. He had a location, a entertainment property. That's where Melech Sdom happened to have gone.
Maybe that's why Melchizedek comes in here.
Yeah.
Interrupted here because it's a kind of distinction, I think, you know, to Melech Sdom. They see themselves, it looks like something, they see themselves as being part of Abraham's, they're all Shabbat kind of in a way. Melchizedek is totally different. He's going with Elazar. He sees the world differently.
Could very well be.
For the rest of the story
that could very well be.
Melech Sdom says, you know, I'll take the resource, you take the people. He's making a deal with him.
Good.
Melchizedek seems much more.
Good. So take a look at the Rashbam on page number 3, below, towards the bottom. There is the Rashbam. And he says something very similar to what you just suggested. Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem. Lekach hifsik bein vayetze hamelech Sdom, vayome melech Sdom. The Torah interrupts the king of stones coming to greet Avram and what exactly he said with informing us about what Malki Tzedek melech Shalem did. Vekasa bintayim, and it wrote in between, Umalki Tzedek melech Shalem hotzi lechem v'yayim. Lilam deinu, she'emet Heishiv Avraham Lemelech Sdom. That Avram, what he responded to was truthful. Kisha Omar Lo, which when Avram told Melech Sdom, Bilodai, I'm not taking anything from you, Melech Sdom. Rak Asher Ochlu Hane'orim. The only thing that I will ask you is to reimburse me for what? For the food that my soldiers ate. V'lo omar masha ochalnu, which we ate. Why? Because Avram would never put a morsel of food from what? From Melech Sdom in his mouth.
Only from.
Or who would Avram eat from? Ki hu ochal mishel Malki Tzedek. Avram was careful to observe, and other Parshanim and Midrashim say this, we know that the Midrash believes that Avram observed all Taryag Mitzvot. And they tell us he even observed all these Rabbanans. So you mean to tell me he's going to eat Ma'achalot Asurot offered by Melech Sdom? Of course not. So he made a point of saying that I will ask you for the money to compensate me for the food that I had to pay the provide the soldiers to work for. But he didn't eat a thing. So why does the Torah interrupt Malki Tzedek? Because the food that Malki Tzedek offered, Avram ate. But the food that Sodom offers, he refused to eat. Yes.
It's also a comparison between Malki Tzedek and Melech Sdom.
That's correct. Exactly. You have a person, Melech Sdom did not change anything about his ways. He didn't suddenly abandon Avodah Zarah and suddenly worship the God of Abraham. No, he did not do that. And in contradistinction, look at Malki Tzedek who offers only praise to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Correct. Correct. That's exactly what he's saying.
If it's Kale.
No, it is El Elyon.
It is.
The God, the powerful God. Means HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Yes.
I said Kale.
Oh, okay. No problem. Okay, not a problem. Yes.
Right.
Yes, that is correct. And in fact,
El Hashem.
Right.
Kale
Elyon. Right.
In other words, Abraham
responded.
Responded. But he uses the name of Hashem.
Correct. Correct.
So that's why it's...
Correct. And according to Rashi and most Parshanim, what does Melech Shalem mean? Yerushalayim. And that where is this encounter with Avram? On the Har HaBayit. In Yerushalayim. And that he is symbolizing that when a person has good fortune, where are you supposed to go in the future and how do you thank God? You come and bring a korban todah. Exactly. That's what he's doing here with Melech Shalem in Yerushalayim, offering thanksgiving for the assistance that God provided during the battle. And that's supposed to be a signal for future generations that whenever you have a good deed being done for you, you come to the Mikdash and offer a Korban Todah. That's, we'll see what Rashi and the Ramban says. That. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll continue next of us.
Thanks.